Good morning, everybody. You've had your break. I want you to do a little work. I want you to imagine something. I want you to imagine me in short trousers. About 40 blah, blah, years ago, I came here in short trousers. I went to school a stone's throw away, and I was on a school trip to see the old Stormont in action. So I remember going into the old Commons Chamber, which is over there somewhere, and seeing people like Jerry Fitt and William Craig at it, hammer and tongs, on the debating floor. But I remember the occasion as much for somebody who wasn't a politician. I saw for the first time in the flesh a man called W.D. Flax. Some of you might remember. Flax was the BBC political correspondent in Northern Ireland. He was a good journalist. Imagine what his life was like. He was reporting a political environment that was as divided as a political environment can possibly be without actual warfare. He was trying to relay the truths as he saw it of this political world to a community in which actually what he reported, how he reported it, might make a difference to life and limb. There was violence on the streets. It's a heavy responsibility, and it's, to Flax's credit, I think that most people remember him as a good journalist, as somebody who did well in that environment. I'm not going to say that I became a journalist because of W.D. Flax. Those of you who remember him, he's not exactly the hero type, chubby, intense character. But I became a journalist certainly because of the time I spent as a teenager in Northern Ireland watching the news, reading the papers, and absorbing the extraordinary events that were happening in the 1970s, and also absorbing the fact that it was being brought to me by journalists who were having to do this job of relaying the truth in the most difficult circumstances to a community in turmoil and trauma. The truth in journalism is vitally important, and I suspect people in Northern Ireland know that better than almost anybody. This isn't going to be my life story, but I'll tell you that I started in journalism at Reuters. And at Reuters, there was a culture of accuracy and fairness and responsibility which was a very powerful influence on me for the rest of my career. But also, it was a necessity. Reuters was reporting the world to the world. It had to be accurate, it had to be fair. Governments, businesses, and newspaper readers around the world were trusting it and relying on it for facts. Again, often in difficult circumstances. There was a very intolerant culture on the desk of any casualness, of any sloppiness, and there was an absolute intolerance of fabrication, dishonesty, and corner cutting. It was very good for me. It was very good for all of the people I went into journalism with, I think. Now, fast forward, as I say, it's not my whole life story, fast forward to the recent years in British journalism, and you see something very worrying. I became a teacher of journalists, and I started to write about journalism rather than just doing it. And I found myself writing about the McCann case. A couple, as you know, who lost their child, whose child went missing in hugely distressing circumstances in Portugal, and who were hounded and lied about by the press, by lots of national newspapers, for month after month after month. A shocking story. I wrote about the case of Christopher Jeffries, a perfectly innocent man, a retired schoolteacher in Bristol, who was essentially accused of murder by a series of national newspapers, day after day, completely without foundation, as he was able to demonstrate, and it was demonstrated by the fact that somebody else was convicted of the murder. And I wrote about phone hacking. Phone hacking, we can casually imagine as, you know, picking up tittle-tattle from listening to other people's voicemails. It was much more sinister than that. Phone hacking was industrial scale, illegal, and was part of a surveillance mentality which was cruel, abusive, and as I say, industrial in its scale. So there were serious things wrong, and they bore no relation to the idea of the sort of Flaxian idea of honestly reporting the events of the day to the public, keeping the public informed as citizens must be in an honest and straightforward way. You can't tell all of the truth all of the time. That's not the way it works. You can tell the best truth you can find. You can be as careful as possible in relaying that to your readers. That's the mission. So we have something terribly wrong. And as I say, not just one or two papers, but lots of papers. Powerful papers. Powerful papers that reach millions of people every day and form opinions not just in their own medium, but in the broadcast media as well. What can you do about that as a society? Imagine what you can do about it as a society. Think about where we could go, how you could remedy it. You don't need to. We had a judge who spent a year and a half doing that for us. The government appointed him. He listened to 300 witnesses at length, representing every possible interested party. He received thousands and thousands and thousands of pages of written submissions from other interested parties. The press had its day, had its dozens of days in court, as it were, to give evidence about its experiences and its views. The victims of press abuse also did. And that's something new. This was the seventh public inquiry into the press in 70 years. It was the first time the victims of press abusers had got to say their piece and recount their stories. As I say, we don't have to imagine the remedy because he produced a report. Now, I would say most of you have heard about or read about that report. It's, you know, this big, 2,000 pages, in four volumes, like a telephone directory, or like several telephone directories. I would guess that most of what you have read about it has been mediated by the press. I would caution you. Go and read the executive summary produced by the judge himself. Make sure that you know what he was arguing and what he was saying. Please, on this issue, do not trust the press to report itself accurately. What did he say? He said essentially three things. He said that there should be an independent complaints operation for the press. There should be some independent body that will hear in a fair way the complaints of ordinary people about accuracy, inaccuracy, unfairness, intrusion, whatever, in the press. Breaches of the code of conduct of the press. He said that there should be an arbitration service as a cheap alternative to the courts, so that if you have a cause in law against a newspaper, you can go by agreement with the newspaper, accept arbitration, and it will be low cost or no cost for the complainant. Be low cost and no cost for the newspapers too, bear that in mind. They complain a great deal about the cost of being dragged into court. This will be a cheap option for them. Those are the two pillars of what Leveson proposes. There's a third element, which is that this body should have the power to investigate, this new self-regulator should have the power to investigate when things go wrong in the press. They should have the power when things go really wrong, as in the McCann case or phone hacking, to impose penalties, sanctions of various kinds. So those are the elements. It doesn't sound too scary to me. In fact, it sounds like the basics of putting some of this right. You've probably been told you may or may not have been believed, that this is all a threat to press freedom. Actually, the Leveson package is almost hermetically sealed against political intervention. Great labor has gone into, from the judge, has gone into describing how the appointments made will all be independent. How the body outside the regulator, which inspects it every 3 years to make sure it's not turning into another press complaints commission, another sort of sham regulator, how that body is composed and how it's independent and how it's detached from politics. Politicians can have no influence over these bodies, over this process of regulation. It is a package of independent, effective self-regulation. So let's imagine now how that might change journalism. Well, one simple comment on that is that for most journalists, it probably won't change anything. Because as we know, and as the press has told us many times, most journalists are doing a good job. Most journalists are trying to be fair and honest. They're trying to be, in their way, like W.D. Flax or those colleagues of mine at Reuters in the old days. They're trying to do a good job by the citizen. If you're a journalist who checks his or her facts, if you're a journalist who doesn't make up quotes, I don't imagine you have anything to fear from effective, independent self-regulation of the press. If you're a journalist who is conscientious about not harming people, unless there is a genuine reason to do so, unless it is in the public interest, if you're conscientious about that, and you have a clear idea of what the public interest is, and it's not that complicated, I don't suppose you'll have much to fear from effective, independent self-regulation. I would say that when journalists imagine the new regime, the new world of self-regulation, many of them are fearful. Many of them say it's going to make my life a little harder. Maybe it might make people's lives, journalists' lives, a little harder in most cases. Well, at most, in most cases. But is it worth it? And the answer is, it is. It has to be. There had to be change. And this is the minimal change. This is the very least that can be done to protect the future McCanns, the future Christopher Jeffries, the future thousand and more victims of phone hacking from the kinds of abuses that made the Leveson inquiry necessary. This is the very least we can do to protect our fellow citizens as journalists. It's not a high price to pay, it is a small price to pay. I ask journalists, what have you got to lose? Wouldn't you like to be seen to be doing a good job, to have high standards? Wouldn't you like to go into this self-regulator, your employer, to go into this self-regulator and embrace it and say, we do this right. We have systems which protect readers from abuse. We have systems which protect our journalists from making mistakes when they needn't. We have a good operation. You'd like that, surely, because you'd be able to go out into the world and say, yes, we're an operation with standards. We're not like the other lot who were doing over the McCanns, who were doing over the Christopher Jeffries, and who were doing over, let me say, thousands of other people in other walks of life who did nothing to deserve it. Wouldn't you want to go out and look your fellow citizens in the eye and say, yes, we're going to do it better. We can show we're doing it better. We're not like that anymore. This is the way we change. Journalists traditionally go out there, that's part of our job, go out there and we say, we point out where things have gone wrong. We tell other people, fix it. We have pompous editorials saying, you know, I want to know the truth about what's happened. I want to know that senior people have taken responsibility. I want to know that you have put in place remedies which will ensure this doesn't happen again. Well, that is what Leveson did. And Leveson is the one who said, put in place the remedies. He prescribed the remedies. He gave them to them. And I say now, they should take them. Thank you very much. I'll go this way.
Thanks, Brian. Brilliant.